Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Tackling inequality isn't easy. It never has been and it never will be. The challenges we face have been decades in the making. And the problems we set out to address will not be solved overnight. But make no mistake, the people of this city have chosen a progressive path.
It was a tale of two cities, a tale of two victory speeches in New York and New Jersey last night. That one, of course, that excerpt from Bill de Blasio in New York, we'll hear later from Chris Christie in New Jersey. Christie, to my ear, was post-Sandy gauziness meets presidential campaign kickoff, and we will get to that. For de Blasio, as you heard in that clip, it was progressive values meet specific policy goals. The speeches were so different. The questions for the two winners going forward are so different. So good morning, everyone. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we have a lot to talk about this morning. We'll drill down on these results and the surprising contradictions in the exit polls in both places, like attitudes versus the candidates people chose. We have great guests coming up. We'll touch on the ballot questions in state of New York and the state of New Jersey and some other election results. We'll take lots of calls, 212-433-WNYC. Did you know the New York City election had the lowest percentage turnout ever and the lowest number of total voters since women's suffrage came in 1920? But let's go right back to the de Blasio speech. This will be our longest excerpt of the morning. This is about 3.5 minutes. And this is the heart of the speech, where he ties the idea of governing as a progressive to specific policy areas where he wants to bring change. You'll hear us fade out the stretches of extended applause here and then back into his words. Bill de Blasio.
New Yorkers are strong and resilient, dedicated and big-hearted. Our greatness is not accidental, but neither is it inevitable. To maintain that greatness and to ensure that our brightest days are ahead of us, we must commit ourselves to progressive ideas that will lift us all up. It won't be easy, but it is essential. It's a challenge I know this city is up to, because I've seen the commitment of New Yorkers from every borough, every neighborhood, every income bracket. The commitment to rise to this challenge of our time together. The best and the brightest are born in every neighborhood. We all have a shared responsibility and a shared stake in making sure their destiny is defined by how hard they work and how big they dream, and not by their zip code. So when we call on the wealthiest among us to pay just a little more in taxes to fund universal pre-K and after-school programs, we aren't threatening anyone's success. We are asking those who've done very well to ensure that every child has the same opportunity to do just as well as they have. That's how we all rise together. Public safety is a prerequisite for the thriving neighborhoods that create opportunity in this city. And so is respect for civil liberties. The two are not mutually exclusive. In fact, we must have both. We must work to promote a real partnership between the best police force in the world and the communities they protect from danger, be it local or global. New Yorkers on both sides of the badge understand this. We're all hungry for an approach that acknowledges we are stronger and safer as a city when police and residents work hand in hand. And that's how we all rise together. Opportunity in New York springs from strong neighborhoods. When we demand that big developers build affordable housing, and when we fight to keep our hospitals from becoming luxury condos, it's not to punish the real estate industry. We do these things so that everyday hardworking people who anchor our neighborhoods can live and work and be healthy in the communities they love. And yes, my friends, that's how we all rise together.
Bill de Blasio, now the New York City mayor-elect, an extended excerpt from his victory speech last night. And that was one extended excerpt. So those were all one extended excerpt. Those were all the words in a row. We just faded in and out of some extended applause. I think he got the biggest applause of the night for one of those lines talking about not turning our hospitals into condos. So he is now the mayor-elect. Listeners, what did you think? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And you can also and we also want to make a time capsule. Give us your predictions. What will be different 4 years from now in New York City as a result of Bill de Blasio's term? 212-433-9692. Again, let's make a time capsule. Give us your predictions. What will be different 4 years from now in New York City as a result of Bill de Blasio's term? You can also do this online. Post your predictions for the time capsule today, and we'll bury it on the internet, not to be touched until we open it back up in 2017. Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehr Show to do it online. With us now, WNYC Metro editor Andrea Bernstein and Esther Fuchs, political science professor at Columbia University and former advisor to Mayor Bloomberg and a leader of his transition team back in 2001. Hi, Esther. Hi, Andrea.
Good morning.
Hi, Brian.
What'd you think of the speech? What'd you think of that excerpt, Esther Fuchs?
Well, I thought he hit all the notes he needed to hit for his base. Strong neighborhoods, affordable housing. Every child should have the same opportunity in this city. But at the same time, there was an olive branch to those who opposed him in the primary, especially. We're not trying to hurt the real estate developers. We have the best police force in the world. These were constituencies that were worried about a de Blasio mayoralty, and I think he went really far in trying to reassure everyone that he could be a mayor for all the people and not turn the clock back on both development and public safety.
Andrea?
Well, the acoustics are nice in that Park Slope Armory, which, by the way, was a building that when he was a council member, Bill de Blasio worked on having become a YMCA and not a condo, which was one of the plans before that. So I think that's sort of one of the reasons why they picked that harbinger of the de Blasio administration.
And it relates to that line that to my ear did get the loudest applause of the night, other than introducing him, of course, and that kind of thing, was when he said, we won't turn our hospitals into condos.
Right. So, I mean, I think that this speech was definitely the most in the direction of an Obama-type speech that I have heard Bill de Blasio deliver. I don't think that throughout this campaign we heard people talking about the thrilling de Blasio oratory, although obviously people liked his message. But I think last night he was able to sort of unite the two, and I think the excerpt that you played really demonstrated that, where he presented his vision, which is sort of not somebody succeeds at somebody else's expense. He kept saying, we all rise together. And this is his fundamental critique of Bloomberg's New York, is that some people rose and some people did not. And he offered a vision for changing that, but also a challenge to himself, which is how do you accomplish that?
Let's look at some of the election results. First of all, the polls were right. De Blasio won by 49 points. And Christie won by 22. We'll get back to that later. But de Blasio won across race, gender, and income groups, education levels, religion, even on Staten Island. He won 96% of blacks, 82% of Latinos. He won among New Yorkers who approve of Mayor Bloomberg 2-1. He only lost among the following groups: whites over 65, white Catholics as a group, even though he's a white Catholic, isn't he, Andrea?
He is a Catholic? White. I don't know that he's a practicing Catholic.
Right.
I believe he's a Unitarian, but I would have to fact check that.
Okay, that might be. I know he has said he's been influenced by Catholic liberation theology.
Without a doubt, in his Italian family that moved here, his mother was Catholic.
He even uttered a few words in Italian last night. And people who said their most important issue was either crime or experience did not vote in the majority for Bill de Blasio. But other than that, oh my goodness. So, Esther, what does this demographic rout tell you about either what the city wants now or who the city is now?
Yeah, I think you're right. It's on both counts. It's what the city is probably the most salient aspect of this. We are now the gorgeous mosaic that David Dinkin talked about, incredibly diverse city. And the liberal message resonates with people. They want a government that can do more for them. And what he demonstrated is that that's a message that does appeal to people in every racial and ethnic and religious group. And I actually thought that he lost among white men. Do you have that data in front of you?
I have to double-check that. Andrea, do you know?
I don't know that. I mean, I am looking at WNYC's election map, which is beautiful. I commend it to everybody. One of the things that really jumps out for me is that despite all of the time that Bill de Blasio spent arguing that Mayor Bloomberg wasn't responsive enough to the victims of Sandy, what you see on this map is the neighborhoods that were, most of the neighborhoods that were hardest hit by Sandy, the Rockaways, parts of Brooklyn, Staten Island, voted for Joe Loda. Those are his biggest blocks on this map. Now, not every area. There were certain areas where there's a lot of public housing, Red Hook, Coney Island. Those areas went for Bill de Blasio. But it is striking that the people that, you know, Breezy Point, what is left of that neighborhood, voted for Joe Loda.
Andrew, those are Republican areas as
right.
much as they are Breezy Point, you know, and those are neighborhoods that have this white ethnic population, which is his sort of smallest group of supporters, if even in the places where they actually supported him. I mean, you know, white Catholics are also Republicans. There's a strong correlation between those two groups. So we do still have Republicans in the city, and there are just fewer and fewer of them. Mm. It's a 6-1 Democratic registration now in New York. It used to be 5-1.
Does this also explain Staten Island? Staten Island has had a Republican for Congress for most of the time, for decades. President Obama only won there by 1 point last year. And without Staten Island, as you both well know, we never would have had a Mayor Giuliani or a Mayor Bloomberg. It would have been a Dinkin second term and a Mark Green win in 2001.
I think what explains Staten Island is that the day that Joe Loda announced his campaign for mayor, he presided over a vote to raise tolls in Staten Island, and that's something that John Catsimatidis in the primary took huge advantage of and ran this blistering television ad campaign. Joe Loda's negatives were driven incredibly high by that, and he was never able to recover. And I don't think
in fact, Joe Loda lost the Republican primary on Staten Island.
On Staten Island.
Right. Right, right. And, I mean, that was a harbinger for Joe Loda in the general election, because if you don't come out of that gate strong, it's very hard to cross over and pull in Democrats in a general election. But we all know, I mean, this message that de Blasio was able to articulate just really resonated, and I don't think it's such a contradiction. I think what's fascinating about New York and our election of de Blasio is it's actually a very optimistic message, and it's a message about government working and wanting government to do more for communities that haven't really gotten enough, whether it's low-income or middle-class populations in neighborhoods, you know, issues like daycare and after school, I can't remember a mayor running on daycare and after school. Affordable housing's always in the mix. But that was extraordinary to me, and that, to me, is an indicator that we in New York City believe and have seen under Bloomberg that government can work and benefit all of us, and we want more. And I think this is a great message for the rest of the country, which, you know, people in Michigan don't know that Social Security and food stamps are government programs and vote against government. We have a better message machine here, and we probably have better services.
And optimistic, I think, in the sense that it does not accept that growing inequality is inevitable, despite the market trends of the last few years. Andrea?
I myself feel good this morning as a resident of the city of New York that this was not an incredibly racially polarized election, which have pretty much been all of the elections in New York City of my adult life have been very racially polarized. And it's even though there were some obvious variations and what Esther was pointing out about the white Catholics and the ethnics who are still heavily Republican, I feel really heartened that, you know, we don't have to have a sort of white people feel this way, black people feel that way about a mayor. That seems like a nice place to
start.
But
how much is that dulled by the fact that the turnout was so extraordinarily low, just over 1 million voters, which for New York City is incredibly low, lowest percentage turnout, I think, since they started keeping those records. I saw the lowest raw number of voters for New York City election since women's suffrage came in 1920.
Yeah, I don't think I'm not going to feel bad about that today. I think that you know, people don't vote when there's a 50-point spread, and the fact that people did shows something.
And you're right, Esther, by the way, about the white males. According to the exit polls as published in the New York Times, Loaded did win white males as a group 48-46.
Okay, that's not too bad then. It could have been quite a bit worse. And you have to remember that females were 52% of the electorate. Males are only 48. Yeah. So you know, that also put de Blasio over the top. But I think the turnout issue is an important one, Brian, and it does distress me that the turnout was this low. But it also goes back to what Andrea was saying. In a non-competitive election, people just don't take the effort to turn out. And it goes back to the debate that we've been starting about, should we be having nonpartisan primaries and the two top vote-getters should be running in the general election? Wouldn't that have been interesting if it had been a general election with Thompson and de Blasio? Mm.
Esther Fuchs from Columbia, WNYC Metro editor Andrea Bernstein. We're also going to bring in WNYC political reporter Bridget Bergen, who is with de Blasio this morning. And Bridget, he just went into a meeting with Mayor Bloomberg?
That's right. I'm actually standing with the whole gaggle of the City Hall press corps in the lobby of City Hall. De Blasio arrived here probably about, 15 minutes or so ago, and, went through the gateside metal detectors and then walked pretty confidently towards the City Hall steps and really didn't pause at all, although somebody asked him how he was feeling, and he just shouted back, "Feels great," and walked up the steps, and he's in with the mayor right now. After that, they're supposed to be taking us up in batches to take photos, but actually Mayor Bloomberg's staff is coordinating the whole thing, and they keep telling us over and over, no questions. There'll be no questions during the photo taking.
Esther, having been there for a transition when Mayor Bloomberg was first elected, what do you think they're saying to each other right now? What's this meeting like?
I actually think this is I'm so glad to hear it's happening, and it's an important meeting. It doesn't always happen among mayors when there's, a little bit of animus, right? I believe in this instance, Mayor Bloomberg can actually share with Bill de Blasio some sort of important issues that are percolating on the city agenda and just sort of say, please be sure and focus on those issues. And at the same time, the transition, he can help with setting up the transition. I know that each commissioner is putting together a transition book to make things actually work. In other situations, I know that transitions really actually were involved in trying to undermine what the next mayor had to do. In this instance, you're going to find everything sort of neatly packaged to make it as easy as possible. It'll be hard, obviously. It's always hard. But at least he won't have to kind of look around for where the men's room is. He's going to understand what the priorities are that he has to deal with in hitting the ground running.
Bridget at City Hall, is there any other indication of de Blasio's schedule today or when he might address the press or the public again on what?
He does have an 11:15 announcement scheduled. We haven't been told what the topic is, but there's a lot of buzz about potential conversations about the transition team. And then there's nothing else on his public schedule today. There's a conference in Puerto Rico of lawmakers that's going on now, and you know, we've been told that de Blasio will be going to that potentially tomorrow. But the only thing on his public schedule as of today, as of right now, is the meeting with Mayor Bloomberg and then the 11:15 announcement.
All right, Bridget Bergen, we'll check back with you later. Maybe after that 11:15 announcement, you'll call us back with some news. WNYC political reporter Bridget Bergen, Brian Lehrer with Andrea Bernstein and Esther Fuchs on the day after the elections. We'll get to New Jersey later. We'll get to ballot questions later. We'll get to other national elections later. Let's get to Wasim calling from Parsippany right now. Wasim, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, this is incredible news. I'm very optimistic, and I think your question about 4 years, I think in 4 years we'll be in a very good place. It's so great to have finally not just a progressive, but he seems to know exactly what's needed right now. And New York is a great city, and I think his potential has been only quarter realized so far. So there's a lot of room for growth. And I think what is great about his leadership and the way he's been able to articulate, I think another commentator had stated that it's something like in a Obama style, great clarity in whatever point he's trying to make, bring New York's potential to its fullest, you know, in engaging all its diverse.
Wasim, thank you. Do you want to get specific at all for our time capsule? What do you think will be different 4 years from now as a result of Bill de Blasio?
I think New York will be much more prosperous, greater New York area, because of just the fact of this is being able to stimulate. Economy is never just pure economy. It's a political economy. And if you engage people and the potential, and everybody has aspirations about their career, their business, the goals in life, and if they feel that there's a nurturing environment, then everybody is fully engaged. And you will see that spur the kind of growth that New York should always have had, you know. Wow. And I think it will inspire the entire region in a similar way.
Wasim, thank you so much. John on the Upper East Side, you're on WNYC. Good morning, John.
Good morning. I am a liberal Democrat. I usually vote Democratic, and I voted for Lota this time. I'm 64 years old. I'm white. And I recognize that the city is changing, that two-thirds of the city is colored now, and I understand the appeal this guy has. He's very articulate, ran a great campaign, but I think he's bad news. I think that the biggest problem the city has is a structurally sick budget. Part of that is due to the fact that the municipal unions are out of control, and there needs to be a countervailing management in the city that is going to fight hard to keep the price, the cost of government under control. This fellow's not going to do it because he's a union man. In all his prescriptions for bringing on all these great programs, which I agree with, you never hear a word about the inefficiency of the city, about cutting bad programs. It's great to have pre-K child care. There's got to be plenty of fat in there to be cut and plenty of benefits that are out of line with private sector benefits that could be cut and pay for these things. You can't keep soaking the rich because they're going to move out. And to the extent you do that, you threaten the job base because they usually are the biggest generators of jobs.
So if we put your call and Wasim's call in the time capsule and nothing else and open it in 4 years, we will have a good indication of one or the other of you being right or the mix. John, thank you for raising all those concerns. And Andrea, all those are real concerns. And I don't know if they're things that a candidate appealing to the central goals and articulating the central goals that de Blasio wanted to articulate necessarily comes up in the campaign rhetoric, but he's going to have to deal with all those things.
I think there are so many sort of interesting ways to kind of parse this right now. I mean, I think obviously everything that Bill de Blasio does is going to be with this backdrop of not going back to the bad old days, both, as he said last night, sort of, you know, violent crime in the city and global terror. So he is obviously going to be very, very, very attuned to sort of to that yardstick. One of the other
In fact, the New York Post, I don't know if you noticed it last night while we were doing the special coverage, as soon as the, you know, projection was announced that he was going to win, they had a New York Post cover on their website. It's not the cover of the paper this morning that I saw, but they had one online that said, first Democrat elected mayor since the bad old days.
Right, I think that's true. I mean, I was surprised that it wasn't Red November, given the red signs, the red ties, and the red dresses that the de Blasio family wore last night. But I think that that is clearly going to be there. I mean, one of the things that's interesting is last night during his thank yous, the very first person for Bill de Blasio to call out was Patrick Gaspard, Ambassador Patrick Gaspard, who is now the ambassador to South Africa, was for many years a New York City union advocate, met Bill de Blasio in the Dinkins administration, and was the White House political director during the first years of Obama. So lived through that very, very difficult Obama transition. And the shout out to him last night made me wonder if sort of having had the Obama template, the de Blasio administration avoid some of the pitfalls of Obama, including sort of thinking at that time, kind of trying to sort of believe like, oh, why can't we all be reasonable, picking health care to the exclusion of all else, and then sort of not having any time to really get anything else on his agenda done. Bill de Blasio's popularity is never going to be as high as it is now.
When we continue in a minute, we're going to play an excerpt of de Blasio thanking people last night. You and I picked up on one of the same things. His little stretch of thank yous for people other than his family, which started with Patrick Gaspard. And we'll hear some of the other names that are not familiar to New Yorkers who he mentioned, and see if either of you can read the tea leaves about who's going to be in this administration and what that might mean for everybody. So stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.
From our family to your family, I give you the next mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio!
We are all at our best when every child, every parent, every New Yorker has a shot. And we reach our greatest heights when we all rise together.
We heard Shirlane McRae, followed by her husband, Bill de Blasio, at the beginning of she was at the beginning of last night's victory event. As we continue to break down all the results from New York and New Jersey last night, and we'll get into the rest of the nation a little bit as we go along here right now with WNYC Metro editor Andrea Bernstein and Esther Fuchs from Columbia University. She was also a former advisor to Mayor Bloomberg and a leader of his transition team back in 2001. Esther, I'm still thinking about the contrast between our first two callers. And not only in their levels of optimism and pessimism about where we'll be 4 years from now as a result, but also how they kind of represented the demographics that we saw in the election results. And that number that we talked about, that one of the few groups that LODA one among was white males, which he carried 48-46 over de Blasio. But de Blasio won the election by 50 points, so that shows how small a percentage of the electorate white males must be at this point.
Maybe
if you can win that block and lose the election by 50 points, how many white males are left in the electorate? Andrea, what were you going to say?
I was going to say the Twitter board should take note of that, the all-white board of Twitter, because I think it's a really interesting thing in our city now when you sort of look at where the power is. And, you know, it's interesting because when Bill de Blasio first got into this race, I sort of thought, well, demographically, can a white male win? So this was way back when. But of course, he kind of turned himself into multiracial guy because of his family and
yes.
sort of representing what people felt were the better angels of New York City.
You mean the white male board of Twitter that's going to make $45 gazillion in the next 24 hours with the IPO?
Yeah, them.
Yeah, well, I think you're right, Andrew, but I also think that he did turn himself into a multiracial guy, but that white men in this race, they just simply are not just less of the electorate, they're also less of the city in general, but particularly women outnumber men in the election. So you don't get the skew is a little different. The electorate was 52% female, so it's and 48% male in general. So you have more women voting both in national elections and in the local election. But
do either of you have the percentage white versus the percentage non-white?
Yeah, the electorate was 45% white and 28% black, 19% Hispanic, and 5% Asian.
Ooh, only 5% Asian still.
Yeah. That was a low turnout for the Asian population, and 16% Jewish, which is a subcategory, obviously, in there. But the electorate was still 45% white. I mean, you have to win in New York with a coalition. No one group dominates, not whites, not blacks. And so that's obviously the good news. I mean, he really did blast it out and win across all these groups. I mean, that 2% difference, even among white men, it's kind of very small. I think he's actually done better among white men than Democrats have done in New York probably for the last, 20 years. So I don't have the data on
Certainly,
that would be my guess that he did better. I mean, when Anthony Weiner crashed and burned, that those first sets of exit polls showed those white male Democrats going over to the de Blasio column. And I think he has some appeal among them, particularly, in the outer boroughs in a way that we haven't seen in the past. But I was actually struck by what this gentleman had said. And, I think it's important for everybody to understand that, this whole mantra of efficiency management is just not all it's cracked up to be. Yes, there are inefficiencies, and yes, we can do better. But you know what? We can't really do that much more with less, as people tried to make us believe in the 1975 fiscal crisis. And, right now, 75% of the city's budget is really fixed costs, which includes interest on debt and the mandated services by the state and federal government, which are social services and this is really, and then they've, and education, and then you have pensions and fringe benefits. So then on top of that, you have police and fire and sanitation, which are about 15%. So there's about 10% flexibility in the budget. Mm. Now that's a lot of money in a $70 billion budget, but it's actually difficult to find savings all the time without simply cutting heads. And, that's what business does, by the way. They're always talking about how they save money, but really what they do is reduce the size of their workforce. So I think people kind of need to understand that it's going to be hard for de Blasio to deliver on a lot of his promises, but yeah. I think he's going to put together a team that will try and do it, and that's most important at this point.
All right, listeners, who else wants to call in? Who else wants to contribute to the time capsule? We heard those two very different takes. What will be different 4 years from now? in New York City as a result of Bill de Blasio's term. 212-433-WNYC. Let's make a time capsule. Give us your predictions. You can also do this online. Post your predictions for the time capsule today, anytime today, and we'll bury it on the internet, not to be touched until we open it back up in 2017. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehr Show to do it online. Let's take another call. Kat in Flushing, you're on WNYC. Hey, Kat.
Hi. You know, my first impression listening to his acceptance speech was actually that it was his inaugural address, and what was he going to do on January 1st?
Esther, what's he going to do on January 1st? Same thing?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a reprise. He's got to hit his high notes on vision and stay away from the laundry lists and actually do what Andrea suggested earlier, which is reassure the people who didn't vote for him that, you know, he's not going to dismantle the police department. Mm-hmm. And he understands that we need real estate to be strong in New York, but we can build affordable housing at the same time, and we can respect people's civil liberties. He's got, you know, he's got a very clear vision, and he's got some very clear policy initiatives that go along with it, and I think he's going to stick to it.
Kat, thank you. Ethan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ethan.
Hey, Brian. How you doing?
Okay.
I love your show, as always.
Thank
I just
you.
Wanted to say that last call, that second last call of John, who referred to the non-white voters in New York as colored, I felt like I was already listening to a capsule from de Klerk era South Africa, or like I was watching Mississippi Burning.
Well, did he say it colored or of color? I'm not sure.
Well, he said it was the white voters and the colored. So anyway, I just wanted to comment that. I was sort of surprised that there was no comment on that. And anyway, if that's the white voters, I'm glad to be voting with the other people.
There you go. Okay. Peter and Park.
I thought he said of color also, but okay. Maybe that was my wishful thinking.
We'll leave that indeterminate. Peter and Pete, people can go back and listen to the clip if you really want to know. Peter and Park Slope, you're on WNYC.
Hi. You know, de Blasio's ardor for Bruce Ratner is no less slavish than Bloomberg's. So when I heard de Blasio last night talk about keeping developers in check and demanding affordable housing, had my head spinning like Reagan's.
Because he supported Atlantic Yards.
Yeah.
So yeah. This is a great topic to bring up, Andrea. What do the members of the permanent government, should we call them that, have to fear from de Blasio, different from whatever they had or didn't have to fear from Mike Bloomberg? And I'm talking about Wall Street, the real estate industry, and the public sector unions.
Well, it's so interesting to me that his first meeting is with Mayor Bloomberg because he, even though people supported Bloomberg voted for Bill de Blasio, clearly de Blasio positioned himself as the not Bloomberg in this race and got incredible loft from that. So by going to that is immediately trying to get to what you're saying, sort of, you know, permanent government, finance, real estate, don't be threatened by me. He got tons and tons of contributions at the end of his campaign from lobbyists. He got quite a bit from Wall Street. He got somewhat less from the financial industry. So we'll sort of have to take a look at that. I mean, you know, on Atlantic Yards, Bill de Blasio's argument has been consistent that he got behind it because it was going to build affordable housing. He says as public advocate, he used his bully pulpit to press for that. Now the rubber hits the road. What are the sanctions going to be against Bruce Ratner, who is a de Blasio friend, who funded his 50th birthday party as a political fundraiser if that housing doesn't get built?
And Esther, if he wants to do development, can he do development differently?
Yeah, I think that he can, and I think he's meeting with Bloomberg because he understands he's got to govern now, and here's the guy who's been in office for 12 years, and so Bill de Blasio is smart. On the affordable housing and real estate development issues, Andrea hit it on the head. It's about sanctions. I mean, Bloomberg built affordable housing more than anybody, more than Ed Koch even. Rudy Giuliani didn't build any affordable housing.
165,000 units.
Under Bloomberg.
Yes.
Under Bloomberg. So people kind of have to get that fact straight. It's hard to build affordable housing. The issue is, can the city use its leverage better for when people need something from city government in order to build? If builders are building as of right, they're going to build and make the most profit on it. But most housing gets built needing some sort of change in zoning or some change in regulation by city government. And that's where de Blasio can step in, I think, effectively and get more affordable housing in the mix with sanctions for non-development. The issue to me around Ratner was not that he supported that, because Bertha Lewis supported that. She was at Acorn then. They did a really good deal on affordable housing. The problem is he built the stadium first, and no one said, hey, build this affordable housing while you're building the stadium.
Yeah.
You know, and good, that's the problem.
Good deal, except that it turned out to be unenforceable. By the way, who's demographically opposed to Bill de Blasio? Apparently Christie supporters. Maggie Haberman from Politico tweeted a picture of de Blasio getting booed at Christie headquarters last night when de Blasio appeared on television there. So,
right. Well, our Sarah Gonzalez, who was there last night, said almost all the people she spoke to in Asbury Park were Republicans. So, yes, that would not be the Bill de Blasio constituency.
A tale of two headquarters.
Right.
All right. We mentioned the thank yous in the de Blasio speech last night. Let's play a clip, about 45 seconds, of people other than his family who de Blasio thanked last night. And then we'll come back and talk about what these names mean. Listen.
I do want to acknowledge two close friends who guided and advised me at every turn, even when the polls didn't look so hot. Please give it up for Ambassador Patrick Gaspard and Nick Baldick. And I want to say how grateful I am to Bill Hires and Emma Wolf and the best campaign team this city has ever seen. And a special thank you to two people who have helped me since my first run for city council here in this neighborhood, Gabrielle Fialkoff and Jim Krauntz. Give them a round of applause.
All right. These are not names that people know, like, I don't know, Jeanette Sadiq Khan or name your Bloomberg aides who have become public figures. Are they lobbyists? Are they big donors? Are they philosophical mentors? Are they going to be the next police commissioner and schools chancellor? Esther, did you know those names?
I know a couple of those names. I mean, Nick Baldick, Bill Hires, and Emma Wolf are all political operatives. They're all really campaign professionals who ran, you know, an extraordinary campaign for him. And so I don't know that they're even going to go into government. I mean, maybe Emma Wolf might go in as a chief of staff or communications director or something along those lines. But this is not a cast of characters that are associated with New York City permanent government, as you mentioned earlier.
How concerned are either of you that with the Bloomberg era, the independent billionaire, no campaign donations era ending, that donors are going to have their hooks into Bill de Blasio in a way that will affect policy that nobody had to think about, whether you agreed with Bloomberg's policies or not? Nobody had to think about that over the last 12 years. Andrea?
Well, I think that what is entirely clear already is that the lobbyists and donor community believe that they should be giving. I mean, he's already gotten, you know, just in the last 10 days, the maximum contributions from people like Airbnb, from D'Amato family members, from, you know, all kinds of lobbyists who think, okay, we have to pony up. Now, whether, you know, we don't know what de Blasio said to them. We don't know if this is just a conclusion that people are coming to on their own. That is something that, you know, we will certainly be watching closely. I do want to say that I thought that it was interesting in those thank yous. I mean, Patrick Gaspard is the ambassador from South Africa, his lifelong dream. He is not coming back to New York City. Three political organizer campaign people. Let's not forget that this was what Bill de Blasio did for many, many years.
Right.
As well as a couple of fundraisers and financial backers. And, you know, I think that Bill de Blasio does feel some sentiment for the people who were with him when no one thought he had a chance, which, as Anna Sale pointed out in a terrific analysis today, and you can find that on our website, was for most of this campaign. Nobody thought Bill de Blasio had a chance. I think that sort of, you know, going back to those people and saying, like, I remember you, you worked hard for me, is an interesting thing. I mean, there's a picture that's on going around on Twitter now of all the press following Bill de Blasio into City Hall. And I remember when Dinkins lost and Giuliani became mayor, and there was a scrum and there were reporters speaking to Mayor Dinkins, and then Giuliani showed up on the steps of City Hall and everybody ran down and pointed their cameras at Giuliani and wanted to hear from him. And I do think that we're going to see this incredible whoosh of transfer of interest and attention from Bloomberg to Bill de Blasio. It's already happening this morning.
We're going to run out of time in a minute. I want to touch some of these other things that people voted on in New York. We'll get to New Jersey later. We'll get to national later. We'll have a quiz later on the election and see how well you've been paying attention, folks. We'll have a 10-question quiz with prizes.
I'm taking the quiz.
Coming up later on.
Win,
and we'll see if you've been paying attention this campaign season. But all the ballot measures passed in New York except raising the mandatory retirement age for judges. Casino gambling, yes. A little mining in the Adirondacks in exchange for some other protected forest land, yes. But judges still have to retire at age 70 instead of 80. Esther, does that surprise you, and is that ageism?
No, I have to say, because I'm on the Citizens Union board, and we voted to oppose that retirement change.
But with
not
the, you,
because
we had
of
your chair on the show, Dick Dady, and
yeah,
he opposed it because it didn't cover enough judges.
That's right.
To
it
protect
was a,
their...
it's, you know, from a political point of view, if you give the judges at the highest level of the courts this change, the odds of helping the family court judges where they need it the most was, you know, close to zero. So we felt like that is not fair, frankly. And most of those judges are actually, you know, don't have to retire till age 76 already. And that's the hardest
docket. There are some exceptions.
Yeah, that's the hardest docket where you want, you know, people who have their focus and are at their best. Whereas older judges probably would be fine in the family court. So it didn't make sense. It was like protecting a protected class.
Yeah, let me also just, I mean, I think that it's clear because, I mean, people like term limits, right? We have learned this over and over and over again. And when presented with this question, once again, people have come back and say, no, 70 years is enough.
And anything to say about the other races? I see that the Republicans won all three county executive races in the New York suburbs, Nassau, Westchester, and Rockland. So we're only blue in the region to a point. And Brooklyn DA Ken Thompson over Joe Hines in the general, as in the primary.
Right. Well, that's a race that he lost twice in Brooklyn, in the Brooklyn DA's race. I mean, I think that was pretty much clear from September that, you know, and I think that's what I was talking about, that whoosh that is very, very hard for any incumbent to say goodbye to, the power, the attention, the perks of incumbency. And Joe Hines couldn't. And he had this chance, and Republicans came and whispered in his ear, and he ran again. But I don't think that's surprising. I think it'll be a big transition. I mean, there's tremendous symbolism that there's now an African-American woman in the public advocate's office. There's an African-American district attorney in Brooklyn for the first time. And there will be a multiracial family in Gracie Mansion, a different city.
By the way,
and
folks,
don't you think it's just as fascinating, though, that we've got three county executives who are all Republicans now? I mean, you know, around the country, people are trying to say that the urban-suburban divide is no longer. We've got poor people in suburbs, and their issues are similar. Seems to me in our neck of the woods, we don't have that. And to have three suburban county executives, I think it's going to actually make it more difficult for our mayor in Albany.
By the way, folks, in case you're interested, I'll be a guest on the Colbert Report tonight to talk more about the election.
Will he be talking to you about Red November?
You never know. Maybe he'll start by asking, you know, so you have a Marxist for mayor now. And, I don't know. We'll find out.
Back in the USSR.
But we'll continue here to talk about the election results. Esther Fuchs from Columbia and former transition advisor and policy advisor to Mayor Bloomberg, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
WNYC's Andrea Bernstein, thank you. And we're going to check in with Richard Hake now for some non-election news, and then our post-election show will continue. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.